legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
Welcome back, everyone. It's the middle of the week, and that means we get a chance to visit with our good friend, the goat rancher himself, Doug Fine. How you doing, Doug?
I couldn't be better. It's good to be with you, Rob.
How are the goats?
The goats are great. One of them's pregnant. Taylor Swift is pregnant, so there's going to be a new member of the Fine family soon.
Good kid. I feel like TMZ. Taylor Swift is pregnant. That's great. So
that would get picked up by like the North Korean press agency or something.
Yeah, there we go. So folks, as you know, Doug checks in with us. He's always traversing the country, helping people out with hemp from Kentucky to Oregon, Colorado to New Mexico, every place in between. And I always just like to find out what's the latest in our hemp technology, our hemp legislation, whatever you got on tap. What can we learn this month?
It's an incredibly exciting time for hemp. First, just looking at a big picture, this is really the first full year, second for some lucky states like Kentucky and Vermont, but the first full year that a real solid collection of states are making use of the changes in federal law last year, the federal farm bill, that allow for cultivation of hemp for research purposes. Meanwhile, bipartisan effort to get full commercial hemp cultivation is pushing through Congress. Now, for me personally, what's happening is I'm learning that we all have our skill set, and I'm involved, as you say, in a couple of hemp projects this year on both coasts, and the effort to try to start an industry is harder than even than trying to be a good journalist and reporting on it. There's so many details all over the world involving imports, involving politics on the ground in individual states, and involving these gray areas and nuances as we approach the inevitable promised land of a valuable industry that's worth $1 billion already in Canada annually and growing 24%. I keynoted the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance conference this year, and those normally reserved prairie types up there are dancing a jig. They don't look like the Grand Blitzkrieg portrait anymore of American or Canadian Gothic. They are just rolling in it. They can't keep up with demand, especially for organic hemp. And that's what I want for our American farmers. So I'll stop there for a second, but I can get specific about what's going on in different states if you want.
Well, you know, we have some questions from the chat room asking about specific states. Speed Limit wanted to know if there's any hemp in the ground right now in Oregon, and Vendicar wanted to know what the status was of hemp in New Mexico.
Oh, great. Okay, so I'll start with New Mexico and actually go on to Kentucky. I have a fun answer there, and I'll tell you about Oregon, because that's where I've been most recently, and there's so much going on there. So, New Mexico is one of the few down stories I could tell about hemp in the world today. It's sad because it's a place I've lived for years. It's very important to my family and my goats to be eating hemp. That's not expensively imported from our friends up north in Canada. And amazing bipartisan effort, grassroots, national organization, very little friction along the way. A divided legislature in New Mexico passes hemp, both Senate and House. And listeners, I hope by now will know I'm a pretty positive guy. I'm grateful to be alive. I don't have much time for negativity. So when I tell you that our governor is a nightmare who needs to be far away from the public service she does on nearly everything, one of the worst of a bad batch of politicians that needs to just go away, Vanna Martinez, vetoed her state farmers' urgent request to get important crop back on the ground, supported by the farmers' union, Republicans, Democrats, vetoed it. Meanwhile, in Kentucky, a project that I'm associated with earned a federal permit. We're good to go. Our project in Kentucky, ready to earn revenue for farmers, ready to bring healthy farming and profitable small farming back to communities while serving domestic food and energy independence. Win. It's an abomination. Almost, I feel, impeachable to veto a hemp bill. and that's a sad story in New Mexico. Anything you want me to add before I go on to Oregon?
You know, I'm just wondering, you said the New Mexico legislature was kind of closely divided, so I'm guessing that they didn't pass it with a veto-proof majority, right? So it's kind of dead there.
Well, actually, no. When I say it's divided, what I mean is that one of the New Mexico bodies is a Republican-controlled House and it's a Democratically-controlled Senate in the state.
Gotcha.
And both bodies overwhelmingly passed. Potentially even override, but I mean, override possibility, but I don't know if there's a political will there. I haven't been following that very closely, but it was insanity. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, it just makes no sense to veto a hemp bill. That's for damn sure. All right, let's talk a little bit about Oregon, because we've heard all sorts of rumors flying around about a 2-year ban on hemp planting. Is there any hemp planting going on? Do we have any reason to worry?
No, no reason to worry. Absolutely not. The big picture in Oregon is that Oregon is going to have the biggest first year in terms of farmers involved and acreage planted of any state that's gone back into modern hemp before any U.S. state. So, to give an example, last year, conservatively, it got off to a good start, and a big first year start is important because it's blown up this year. They had 98 hemp projects approved by their state agriculture department this year, of which I'm part of one. And so that's up from about a half dozen last year. Oregon this year is going to have, I think, by planting time in the next month or so, Oregon is going to have probably about a dozen permit keys from the state's debut agricultural season. And that acreage, it's going to be, it's going to reflect the biggest first year to date. I don't know whether or not Vermont in their second year is going to be bigger. I know Colorado is going to be big here in their third year. And also, North Dakota is looking good. But other states have had trouble getting their federal permit. Like Tennessee, I know, has been had farmers ready to go, investing in permits, investing in land, and having trouble pulling it all together. So the big picture is that this valuable industry, this billion-dollar industry in Canada alone, and that's just on the seed side, not even doing any fiber, which American farmers want to do, Oregon farmers want to do. There's Oregon fiber processors ready to go, ready to harvest Oregon-grown hemp and move Oregon towards energy independence, domestically state-grown hemp. How about that? Ready to go. It's going to be a huge industry. I'm a new to this kind of world, to any kind of business, new industry. The closest I can compare it to is when I was working in Silicon Valley, just out of college as a journalist, when modern Silicon Valley was really blowing up in a big way. There are growing pains. That's just the way it is, and that's to be expected. To me, who's just a common sense kind of guy, I'd never work as a politician because I just say, that's BS. No, you can't do that. BS doesn't fly with me. And so, people who are more experienced than I, and see the forest with the trees, don't get too stressed about it. But Oregon's had to deal with a couple of issues. One, the biggest issue Oregon's had to deal with, that at a late date, the state, which has been trying to do everything it can under difficult circumstances, state entity, the Agriculture Department and OSU notably, they dropped out of the process of directly ordering seeds for farmers, which is a complicated situation. It certainly hasn't hampered Colorado's industry, but Oregon's farmers want to make sure that they're being very clear that they're in sync with all federal and state laws, and so now farmers are having to scramble to show that, say, we're doing research, which is what's required under the Farm Bill provision, even though we're going to do it in a different way than Kentucky's done it, and in a different way than Colorado's done it. This kind of thing is evolving by the day, and it's fun to watch, but it would have, Kentucky did the dirty work last year for a particular model. It's an arbitrary model, but it works for them, and Oregon wants to do it that way. Oregon's farmers want to do it that way, and now they're having to forge a new way. But the federal delegation is so supportive, and it's, we're all hoping for the best. And I think in the end, there's going to be good acreage cultivated in Oregon. The other issue is that, in Oregon's legislature, there's all kinds of as I'm sure you cover exhaustively on the show, and I know I hear it whenever I tune in, which is whenever I can. I'm a press journalist around at the time. There's a million bills going through on all kinds surrounding the cannabis, whether we're talking about psychoactive cannabis or what today is often called high cannabis or industrial cannabis or agricultural cannabis with very low THC. And it's a learning curve for everybody, you know. My constituency, personally, as a journalist, is the whole plant. And so, you know, when I speak about it, I pull forth the lessons that I learned from a year in the Emerald Triangle in the southern part of it, researching Too High to Fail, my book about sustainable psychoactive cannabis. And that's what Oregon farmers largely go to. So these are my peeps, and I care as much about that as the hemp side or any other side, as do anybody that's even thinking about them. Most of them that are active about it also care about or even cultivate psychoactive cannabis as well under law-abiding conditions. And so the discussions that we're hearing are very much about within the family kind of stuff. And I'm not interested in politics. It's such a messy, dirty, ugly thing by nature when you have lobbyists coming in and feel like they have to spend money and they ask legislators to put things forth that could never have a chance to go getting passed, but they're campaigners, and they sometimes get more political than they deserve. What I will say is that there's learning curves, there's growing pains on all sides of the cannabis plant. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to hemp, I think that it's going to be discussions resulting in what has worked for all other crops in Oregon in its history, with voluntary discussion, good communication, and good neighborhood policy. Everybody wants all varieties of the plant to work. We're all in this together.
Yeah, let's hear it for that. All right, so Doug, last question here before we wind things up. You mentioned Kentucky briefly. Is there more we need to know about Kentucky or any other states?
So one of the things that has me really excited, you asked me about new applications. One of the things that has me really excited is, first of all, the fact that last year there was a Colorado harvest that went into nanotechnology research for next generation batteries, right?
Right.
At the same time, Tesla announces they're going to start selling home batteries for solar power, right? So I want to see those made of hemp, powered by hemp. I want to see hemp fiber in the Tesla. And that's all realistic, not a pipe dream. When it comes to Kentucky, a lot of people are really interested in nutraceuticals because when legitimately grown and rendered, another nutraceuticals can really help people where there is a real viable market for it. Of course, we still are in the research realm when it comes to hemp, but that allows sales and marketing research in places like Kentucky. So that's getting a big jump start, but I'm a big, for those who have read my books, they know I'm really into sustainability and the whole plant, and that it's not about one cannabinoid versus another. It's about various combinations of cultivars and strains that have a combination of terpene, cultivars, phytoplankton, et cetera, that most benefit people for their good health and healthy various conditions. So I'm excited to broaden that. I'm also excited that the project that I'm part of is attempting to put into practice the tri-cropping model that I wrote about at HempBound, which is harvesting one harvest, or at least one cluster of harvests, for fiber, seed, and energy applications so that farming communities can have value-added harvests that allow real, long-term, sustainable, lucrative businesses in a Dr. Bronner's model for communities that do not rely on Wall Street institutes, the risk of getting bought out and turned into something else by hedge funds, et cetera, and we're going to try and get that going in Kentucky starting this year. I'm very, very, very excited about that.
All right. Well, that's very good news. We're happy to hear the developments in industrial hemp taking place all across the country, and we're happy to have Doug Fine, the author of Too High to Fail and Hemp Bound, here to tell us all about it. Doug, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks or so, and good luck with everything, and happy Hemp Day to you.
Happy Hemp Day to you, too. thanks for having me, and we'll have a lot of really exciting things to talk about in 2 weeks, I'm sure.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. What can Arizona expect on the upcoming Kevin Sabet Marijuana Legalization Education Tour? You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. Visit 420radio.buzz to download your smartphone app today.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.